Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Sukkah, Yud Tes. We are found on the top of Yud Tes Amud Aleph. We are continuing our discussion, Pitika Yod Vesosim. Yesterday, we introduced ourselves to the idea that there are halachic walls. There are many different types of halachic walls that we were already introduced to over the course of the first parak. But yesterday, we received an introduction to a brand new halachic wall, otherwise known as Pitika Yod Vesosim. This is, of all the halachic walls, the one that is subject to the most controversy, both in the Gemara and amongst the Rishonim as well. The basic idea behind Pitika Yod Vesosim is that if I have an edge of a beam that is one tefach wide, so the edge is able to come down and create a partition, a halachic partition, just by simply viewing that one tefach extending downward. So this is the idea behind Pitika Yod Vesosim. So as we saw yesterday, a major controversy between both Abai and Rava, and also between Rav and Shmuel as well. The Gemara tried to parallel the two machloksim together. Rav and Shmuel were arguing about a chsadra bibika. A scenario in which they were arguing about was where I had a pavilion out in the middle of nowhere. Basically, it was four poles and a roof on top of the four poles. But it did have a frame on it. And so now, if I were to say pitikra on all sides of the frame, so that it would come down and create an enclosure. So if you recall in yesterday's daf, so that was the debate between Rav and Shmuel. So Shmuel was of the position that simply does not work, and Rav says it works. And according to Rav, Pitikra Yod Vesosim on all four sides. So the Gemara wants to know that maybe the same thing is true regarding Abai and Rava. Abai and Rava were arguing about Nachsadra. So you had a courtyard, and then you had a balcony extending over the courtyard. You didn't have the poles at the end of the balcony, but the balcony had a one tefach thick edge to it. And does the edge now come down? So Abai and Rava were arguing over that very issue, where Rava says it doesn't work and Abai says it does work. And so presumably, the machlokus between Rav and Shmuel, the same machlokus between Abai and Rava. So what we ended off with yesterday, just a little bit of Gemara to keep straight, but what we ended off with is that not necessarily. Abaye and Rav certainly are seemingly in agreement with one another, but the Gemara pointed out that Rava does not have to be against Rav. Could be that Rav generally subscribes to the idea of Pitikra Yod Vesosim, but he only subscribes to the idea of Pitikra Yod Vesosim if what the frame was intended was for the interior. Let's take again for the example of the Achsadra Bibika. So I have the pavilion out in the middle of nowhere. So what I did is I made four poles, I put a frame on top, and I put some sort of roofing on top, whatever. Schach, it doesn't have to be schach. We're not talking about sukkah, we're talking about Shabbos. So I put some sort of roofing on top. But that frame was created for the interior. So as a result of that, so we're going to say Pitikra Yod Vesosim. However, what Rava will tell you is that Rav would not necessarily agree in our case. Why? Because in our case, so what do we have? We have a balcony. The balcony is created for the interior of the balcony. The balcony was not created for the interior of the courtyard. And so one could make the argument that Pitikra does not work for something where it was not intended to enclose that area, but rather was intended to close the other area, the area underneath the balcony, not the area that is outside of the balcony, the very interior of the courtyard. Okay, so we'll say Pitikra in one direction, not in the other direction. That is where we ended off with yesterday. We're going to pick it up right where we left off yesterday. We are in Yud Tes Amud Aleph. We are about four lines from the top of the Amud Tanan. So we're going to take a look back at our Mishnah. V'chein chatzer mukefes achsadra. So our Mishnah talked about a chatzer that is surrounded by an achsadra, meaning the case of the pavilion. Now, our Mishnah said that if the distance between the end of the ledge and the actual walls of the complex, so the walls of the courtyard, so if there are more than four amos, so then we don't have Dofen Akuma, and obviously our Mishnah is talking about where there are no Pitzimim. So our Mishnah said under those circumstances, it's not going to be a good area. And the Gemara now asks a very simple question, V'amai Nema Pitikra Yod Vesosim. So if you subscribe to Abai's viewpoint, that the edge of the roof is able to just simply drop down. And for Abaye, there are no qualifiers, meaning you can have the edge of the roof dropping down, whether it's for the interior or whether it's for the exterior, doesn't matter. Meaning for Abaye, you have a halachic wall, a fictional wall that comes down and drops down. And so therefore, according to Abaye, why does our Mishnah say that it's possible? Meanwhile, according to Abaye, it would be kosher. So that's a very strong question. The Gemara answers. So Tir Gemarav, Aliba Dabai, Kishu Kishihishva, Eskir Kir Yuruyav. And so in defense of Abaye comes Rava. Now, even though Rava's arguing with Abaye, but that doesn't matter. Meaning, Rava may be arguing with Abaye, but that doesn't mean he can't defend Abaye. Again, everyone over here is in pursuit of the truth. And when you're in pursuit of the truth, so you're not, it's not my position versus your position. It's rather, I think that this way is more correct. You think that way is more correct. I'm ready to see both sides of it. I'm ready to see my side. I'm ready to see your side. So Rava says to Abaye, I do see your side. Meaning, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, why wouldn't the Mishnah say it's okay according to you who subscribe to Pitik or Yorvi Sosim? So it must be that the Mishnah is talking about a case where the Schach is running level with the edge of the balcony. So in other words, we'll say Pitik or Yorvi Sosim, but that's when the edge of the balcony is visible. You need to see a tefach of the edge. If you cannot see a tefach of the edge, and so that's what Rav is saying, by his defense over here would be. Since I can't see the tefach of the edge, i.e., the schach is now running right alongside parallel with the edge of the balcony. So under those circumstances, we're not going to be able to say pitikra yod visosim. Okay. Good. That brings us to the end, not to the very end, but to the end of the discussion between Abaye and Rava, in terms of whether or not we will say, will be saying pitikra yod visosim. So Rav and Abaye are arguing as to the efficacy of having a wall drop down just predicated on the edge, where Rava says it does not work, Abaye says it does work. However, we do have to end off, even though we're pretty much concluding the topic, we do have to end off that Rava may have a qualifier, in that Rava does not have a full rejection of pitikra yod visosim, as the Gemara pointed out. Rava's rejection, pitikra yod visosim, is that when it is not circumscribing the area that it was intended for, but rather the exterior, so that's when Rava's going to reject pitikra yod visosim. But for the interior, so Rava's ready to adopt and accept the idea of pitikra yod visosim. That's where it seems like we end on the entire discussion. Now, b'sura masna la mishmaita b'hai lishna. So in surah, the way that we just said it over, by the end of yesterday's daf, the beginning of today's daf, so that's how they said it over in the yeshiva of Surah. However, in Pumbedisa, they say over the machlokas a little bit differently. And notably, it goes as follows. That if I made my schach in the achsadra, so again, it's the same structure, it's the same layout that we've now been discussing for the last couple of days. Okay, so I have a U-shaped courtyard. I have a balcony coming off of the three sides of the U-shaped courtyard. I now am putting a schach right in the center of that courtyard, right? That is obviously going to be supported by the balcony. And over here, we're talking now about where there are no pitzimim, there are no poles at the edge of the balcony. And so therefore, nothing there is forming the wall. So according to everyone, it would be possible. Now, in this version, in the Pumbedisa version, nobody's subscribing to Pitikra Yod Visosim. Not Rava, not even Abaye. However, Yeshla Pitzimim, now if it has poles, so Abaye Amar Ksher, Rava Amar Psula. Now when we say poles again, let's remind each other, we're talking about where the poles are within three Tfachim, one of the other. So under those circumstances, the Machlok, between Abaye and Rava. Now Abaye Amar Ksher, Amin and Lavad. So Abaye says it's fine because he subscribes to Lavad. And Rava Amar Psula, Lo Amin and Lavad. And Rava says that no, we don't subscribe to Lavad. Now, in this version, obviously, it's a little bit shocking. Hopefully, you were a little bit surprised by what we just saw. Meaning, Rava over here is rejecting the idea behind Lavud. So that, of course, is really hard to entertain. Meaning, Lavud is a concept that we've been saying pretty flatly since the beginning of the Masechta. And the idea that when you have two items that are within three tfachim of one another, and the item now is viewed as halachically closed off, so we've been saying that all along. So how could we possibly now, the Gemara generate a position where Abaye says that he simply, sorry, where Rava says that he simply doesn't subscribe to Lavud. So what you're going to have to say over here is that when he says that he doesn't subscribe to Lavud, so what he means to say, and Rashi says this, is that what he means to say is that of course he's not rejecting Lavud. There is no rejection of Lavud. It just simply means that Lavud is limited. When does Lavud work? It only works for the area that it was intended for as its interior, meaning Lavud is only one directional. This is now, again, this is what we're learning right now, is one opinion, one version of how to understand Lavud according to Rava. Lovud is only one directional. Lovud only works as a fictional wall only in the direction in which it is to its interior. However, we are not prepared to say Lovud for the exterior. That's the way Rashi understands Rava. Rava is not rejecting Lovud. He's just simply giving it only a one direction. And since over here in the case of our courtyard, so those beams, those bars that were placed within three tvachim of one another that basically go around the courtyard, so they are not intended for the center of the courtyard. Their intention was for the area underneath the balcony. So therefore, we will say Lovud, but only in the direction of the balcony, not in the direction of the interior where we want to make the sukkah. Therefore, I don't have a wall. Therefore, it's no good. Okay. V'hilchasa, the Gemara concludes the Kalishna Kama. When all said and done, we just had two versions of the machlokes between Abai and Rava, whether they're arguing about the limits of Lovud or they're arguing about the limits of Pitikur Yod V'Sosin. The Gemara concludes that we don't go with the second version, the Pumpadisa version, but rather we go with the Surah version. Therefore, what they're arguing about are the limits of Pitikur Yod V'Sosin. By Lovud, there are no limits. Lovud creates a wall in both directions, both for the interior and the exterior. And the only time that we have a debate between Rav and Abaye is only going to be on the concept of Pitikur Yod V'Sosim, where Abaye has no limits on Pitikur Yod V'Sosim. The edge of the wall is going to come down in order to create a wall both for interior and for exterior. And Rav says, no, we'll only say Pitikur Yod V'Sosim, but only to come down, only for the exterior, not for the, I'm sorry, only for the interior, not for the exterior. That is the Gemara's conclusion. And also, again, I know I pointed this out yesterday really quickly. I'll just mention it again. Are we prepared to say Pitikur Yod V'Sosim on every side? The Gemara in Shavuos that we learned at the end of yesterday's year, the beginning of today's year, the case of Achzajer Bebika would certainly seem to indicate that we are ready to say Pitikur Yod V'Sosim on all four sides. However, as I pointed out yesterday, Tosos in yesterday's Daf and in the Gemara in Erevin has a major discussion in terms of whether or not that's true. Whether or not we're ready to say Pitikur Yod V'Sosim on all four sides, or Tosfos' position is that we're only ready to say Pitikur Yod V'Sosim only on one side, not four sides. How does he learn the Gemara in Erevin? So, if you remember, I think we touched on it. Otherwise, let's just suffice to say, you have to go through the Gemara in Erevin to see how Tosfos understands and adopts that Gemara. Okay. We're in Yud Tesamen Aleph, we're about a quarter of the way down. We're starting with the words Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi, Ashkechel Rav Kahana de Kamasachech Agab Echsadra. So Rav Ashi now finds Rav Kahana where he made his sukkah on the Echsadra. So again, it's the courtyard, the U-shaped courtyard. It's the balcony coming off. It's now schach on top of the balcony, the edge of the balcony. As we've been discussing all along, so Rav Kahana Lamaisa made such a sukkah. She'ein La Pitzimim. Now it happens to be that it was more than four amas away from the walls of the houses. And there were no poles. And so now Rav is looking at his student Rav Kahana and he's wondering, what is making this a kasher sukkah? What walls are you using in order to make it a kasher sukkah? So Amar Leilo Sevela Mahad Amar Rav Yesh La Pitzimim Kishera Ein La Pitzimim Pesula. So he says, I don't understand. Without the Pitzimim, without the poles, creating the walls through the mechanism of Lavud, so what walls do you have? So Achvele, So Rav Kahana now points near b'mifnim v'shavim b'chutz inami near b'chutz v'shavim b'mifnim. Deitmar near b'mechutz v'shavim b'mifnim nido mishum lechi v'lechi haynu p'tzimim. So he says like this. So first of all, we need a little more context over here. Now, if you happen to be working with a picture, that would be really helpful right now, because this is a very visual answer that the Gemara now is just offered. And that basically is as follows. First of all, the sukkah that Rav Kahana is sitting in right now has two bona fide walls. In other words, it's not the U-shaped courtyard that we've been describing up until now, but there actually are two actual physical walls already. And all we need now is the third wall. Let's remind each other that for the third wall, I don't need a lot. I just simply need a tefach for that third wall. And so now when Rav Ashi says to Rav Kahana, where is that third wall? So he says that the third wall can be seen, but the third wall can be seen only from one side. Now this is what's called near mibifnim v'shava mibachutz, or near mibachutz v'shava mibifnim. Now, in order to understand and appreciate this, so we have to remind each other of a Gemara in Erevin. Now the Gemara in Erevin spoke about the Mavui. We just touched on this earlier. I know the Mavui comes up a lot over here in the beginning of Masechta Sukkah, but it makes sense. In other words, the Mavui is a structure in which we're basically trying to create an additional fourth wall. So it has to do with Hilchos Mechitza. It's going to come up a lot. So again, let's go back to the Mavui. By the Mavui, so it is a structure that is surrounded by three walls. And in order to carry in the Mavui, so you need a tikkun. You need a way to correct the Mavui, either by Korah or Lechi. So just in yesterday's daf, we were focusing on the Korah. And today's daf, we're going to be focusing on the Lechi. The Lechi is not that sophisticated. It's just simply a vertical pole that I'm putting at the edge of the entrance of the Mavui, on either side of it. I only need one Lechi, right? Machlok is over there in the Mishnah Erevin, but I only need one Lechi. It's just simply a vertical pole. Now, the Gemara over there discusses that Lechi. Let's say, for example, that the Lechi cannot be seen from the interior. It can only be seen from the exterior. Now, what does that mean? So again, if you have a picture of, if you have a working picture, it's very helpful. But basically, the idea is that it does jut out. There is a protrusion, but the protrusion is only to the exterior of the Mavui, not to the interior of the Mavui. So by which, when you're standing outside of the Mavui, you can easily see the protrusion and understand that that will basically be your Lechi. That is nira mi b'chutz v'shabim mi b'fnim. Alternatively, we could also be talking about a scenario in which you could see the protrusion from the inside, but not from the outside. That's nira mi b'fnim v'shabim mi b'chutz. So the Gemara now is telling us that under those circumstances, so either one of them would serve as a good Lechi. What the Gemara now is doing is it's taking that halacha and it's now transposing that halacha to our discussion. Meaning when Rav Kahana now is pointing to a sukkah and he says, look, I'm sitting in a kosher sukkah. So where's a kosher sukkah? So it's at the edge of the balcony. So at first, Rav Ashi is thinking to himself, is the edge of the balcony serving as his third wall? It can't be because again, it's more than 4 amas away from the actual house itself. We don't have Dofen Akuma. There are no Pitzimim. We don't say Lavud. What about Pitikr Yod Vesosim? So presumably they subscribe to Rava, where we don't say Pitikr Yod Vesosim. So where's that fourth wall? Oh, I'm sorry, where's the third wall? I'm sorry, we're talking about a sukkah over here. So he says, well, it's going to be predicated on Nir Mi Bifnim V'Shavim Mi Bechutz, meaning that it's there, but it can only be seen from one side. It can only be seen from the interior, or it can be seen from the exterior. But in other words, he's using the laws of Mavui, and he's basically supplementing our sukkah by using this idea of nir mibifnim v'shav mibichutz. Good. That is how Rav Kahana feels that he's sitting in a kosher sukkah. Now, if all this is first of all, all this is a lot of information just to process in of itself. But once you got it down, so it is a little bit strange that what comes out over here is that you're using a Mavui halacha in terms of achieving a good lechi, in terms of now making a third wall for a sukkah. And you can see the top tosos right over here in our Amud. He says that's really difficult. So Tema, top tosos on Yud Tes Amud Aleph. Heich umoa besukkah, kevet alo minkar mibifnim, shishi shol tefach. So, and if we're talking now about where it's near mi b'chutz, I could see the third wall, but only from the exterior, but I can't see it from the interior of the sukkah. So Tosos says, how in the world does that work? Meaning for a sukkah, don't I need a third wall? Granted, it only has to be a tefach, but I need a third wall. And I'm using now a principle that works for a mavui, and I can use it over here. I can't see it. And Tosu says, and what? So what do you want to tell me? You want to use the migu concept? Now, this is a concept that we saw back on Daf Zion. Remember, what an interesting Gemara we saw back then. The idea that since it works for Shabbos, therefore it's going to be working also for Sukkah as well. Right? We talked about that in terms of a Sukkah that's right next to a house. And even though the Sukkah itself is not Omen Merubah Laparts, but nevertheless, since it operates as a Sukkah, it's a Kasher Sukkah, so therefore it would also operate as a bona fide Rosh Hashanah Yachid. Good, we saw that back on Daf Zayin. So Tosfos says maybe the same thing over here. Tosfos says, yeah, maybe, but I'll tell you what, we only say migu on the Shabbos itself, meaning the migu does not extend for the entirety of Sukkos. Migu means that since it's a wall agabe Shabbos, so it's also going to be a wall agabe Sukkah, but only on Shabbos. So in other words, of the 7 days of Sukkah, this would only work one of the 7 days. And also Tosfos points out that if it's a din da oraisa, so migu won't get me to a din da oraisa. This goes back to a discussion Tosfos had back on Daf Zion. But anyway, Tosfos has a tremendous difficulty understanding how this in fact works. Using the principle of nirud min b'chutz v'shav min b'fnim, which works in terms of creating a lechi for my tikkun mavui, and using it over here, it is in fact a very difficult concept, and we'll leave it off at that. Meaning, okay, Tosfos has a difficulty in terms of understanding how I can take the halachas over there and transpose them and use them over here. Okay, we're halfway down on Yutes Amud Aleph. We're continuing in the Gemara Tana. We learned in a brisa psala yotzim in a sukkah nidon kesukkah. Okay, this is a concept that we touched on earlier, but here it is. Daf Yutes Amud Aleph. The Gemara now is going to be discussing extenders, meaning that what the idea is over here is that if I have an extension of a sukkah, we treat it like a sukkah. Now that's a very broad concept, and it needs practical application. So the Gemara is going to give practical application. Once again, I strongly encourage you, if you have anything over here that can show you a picture of what the Gemara looks like, it would be very helpful. A masifta, an art scroll, whatever the case may be, but it would be very helpful if you had pictures to look at. So my psala yotzim in a sukkah. Again, let's remind each other, the word psal over here does not mean puzzle. It means kasher schach, right? The word psal, pesel, I'm not really sure how to pronounce it, but the idea is that the kasher schach is referred to as psal. Rashi earlier in the Masechta said it's because it's the leftovers after the harvest, meaning the chaff and the branches and the twigs, anything left over after you harvest and you take the fruit. So that is what's called the psal, the leftovers. So psal yotzim nasukah nidon kesukah. So what exactly does that mean? So the Gemara is going to go through a number of iterations of what that could possibly mean. Number one, my psal yotzim nasukah amar ula kanim yotzim la'achore sukah. So Ula says that they are the schach that comes out from the back of your sukkah. Okay, and basically, if I could try to describe this, I'll describe this really briefly. The idea is that on the back wall of my sukkah, I have a regular sukkah, three walls, and on the back wall of the sukkah, so the two parallel walls are extending a little bit behind it, so that now I could basically sit in the sukkah proper, or I can actually sit behind the sukkah because it is bounded by three walls. The back wall of my sukkah and the two extending parallel walls. And of course, there's schach on top, which is extending as well. So the Gemara says, okay, that's nice. This is Ula's opinion. You have three walls. So v'habin and hechsher sukkah b'di'ika. And you have the minimum shear of a kosher schach, 7x7. V'habin and sosam ruba mechamsa. I need more shade than sun. So the Gemara says b'di'ika. Yeah, you have that as well. So v'yachim ma'ila memra. So the Gemara says that's great. So now this behind the sukkah, it's a kosher sukkah. It's got three walls. It's got kosher schach. Like why is this a chiddush? Of course you could send that sukkah. So the Gemara says, yeah, but look, that back wall, which now you're using you're using the back side of it. I might have thought that that wall only works and operates for the interior, not for the exterior. And right, we just, beginning of today's daf, we talked about the Shita of Rava, that the P-Tikra only works one directionally, not two directionally. Now that's a fictional wall. The Gemara for a moment thought that the same thing would be true regarding an actual wall. Regarding an actual wall, it only operates in one direction, not in both directions. And the Chiddush of the Gemara, at least according to Ula, is that no, when it comes to a real wall, it operates on both sides. Both interior and exterior as well. So the Gemara says, Rabbi, Rav Yosef Armitav, ayo achabe kanami yotzim lifnim in a sukkah, umashkava azla, charadofen behadayu. So this is now going to be the second explanation of the Gemara, and that is Rav and Rav Yosef. So they both say that we're talking about where the schach is extending out of the sukkah, meaning totally new scenario. So what do I have? I have a kosher sukkah, and it happens to be that one of the walls just keeps on going, and the schach follows that wall. So ma'u detema ha'leis be'hechsher sukkah kamash v'lan. Now, if I look at that extended wall just in of itself, in other words, if I were to cut and paste just the area of the extended wall, what do I have? I have one wall and I have schach, and that's nothing. So that's the hava min would be that that's no good. But the Chiddush, of course, is that no, this is an extension of a kosher sukkah. Meaning, what do I have over here? It starts with three kosher walls, and it happens to be that one of the walls just keeps extending outward, and the schach continues to follow it. So that is an example. That's our second example of psal hayotzei min hasukkah, and because it's coming, it's extending from a kosher sukkah, so therefore the extension also is considered a kosher sukkah as well. That was scenario number two. Scenario number three. Rabba Barbarchana Amar Rabbi Yochanan Nitzrachel Asuka Sheruba Tzilsa Meruba Mechamta Umiyuta Chamta Meruba Mitzilta Mao Detema Tipasa Bahach Porta Kamash Malan. So a totally new interpretation over here, a third interpretation, and that is that we're not talking about where you have an extended sukkah, but rather it's a regular sukkah. It just happens to be that some of the schach is perfectly kosher and some of the schach is not kosher. Now, when I say some, let me be more specific. The majority of the schach is kosher schach, meaning it's thick and it provides more shade than sun. Some of the schach, the minority of the schach, has more sun than shade. And the chiddush over here is that would be, in fact, a perfectly acceptable sukkah, the entirety of it. Mao detemo tipasa ba'ach porta. So I might have thought that the portion of the schach that is that does not provide ample shade is not going to be acceptable. So kamash malan. So the chiddush is no. In other words, we look at the sukkah in its totality, and since the majority of the sukkah is providing the necessary shade, the proper shade, so therefore the entire sukkah is going to be good. So umay yotze yotze me'achshir sukkah. So over here, it doesn't really fit the language so well because we're describing it as psal hayotze min sukkah. So in the first and second interpretation, we were talking about how it's extensions. Over here, there are no extensions. It just happens to be. Most of the schach is good. Some of the schach is no good. But what is that language of extension? So the Gemara says, you're going to have to explain that the word yotze over here means it was yotze mehechsher sukkah. It just means that it exited the category of a kasher sukkah, meaning that minority of the schach that does not provide ample shade. Okay. Rabbi Oshia Amar lo nitzcha el schach pasol. So the Gemara now is going to give a fourth interpretation. That's as follows. We're talking about a sukkah katana. Once again, the base minimum size of a sukkah in terms of area is 7x7 tefachim. So you have now this tiny sukkah, but again, it's kosher, 7x7 tefachim, and less than 3 tefachim of the schach is not schach, but rather it's schach pasul. So, but it's less than 3 tefachim. You remember in yesterday's daf, the Gemara said that if it's 3 tefachim of schach pasul, so it's no good. Even though the typical shear of schach pasul is going to be 4 tefachim, but at a base minimum sukkah of 7x7, 3 tefachim of schach pasul is no good. You remember we saw the Rashi together. Rashi says that it's a function of the fact that because the sukkah is only 7, so 3 even though it's a minority, but it's still too significant an area. And therefore, three tefachim of schach pasul within a 7 tefach sukkah is simply no good. Over here, what we're describing is that it's under 3. Under 3 tefachim is schach pasul, so such a sukkah would be good. So, my yotze mitar sukkah. And again, how does that work into the language of yotze? It just simply means that it exited a kosher sukkah. So, maskev le ravoshi lo yehe ala aviv, aviv pachos mishosha tefachim kesukkah katana, besukkah katana mi pasul. So he says, I don't understand. What did you just provide over here? That area that's under 3 tefachim has to have schach pasul. What do you mean it has to have schach pasul? It doesn't have to have schach pasul. It could be avir. It could just simply be air. Again, if it's less than 3 tefachim, we employ the rule of lavud, and the rule of lavud tells me that's closed up. So what difference does it make whether it's air or whether it's schach pasul? So amalei Rabbi Abba zumitzarif v'yishenim tachtav v'zumitzarif v'ein yishenim tachtav. So to which the Gemara says, no, it is in fact different. If I have less than 3 tefachim and it has schach pasul on top, so A, your sukkah is kosher, because again, the area of schach pasul is less than 3 tefachim, so your sukkah is kosher, and B, now you could sleep under the entire area. Now, mind you, by the way, it's really hard to navigate in such a small area, but you don't have to now differentiate and say, well, I can only be sleeping under the schach pasul now is considered part and parcel of this sukkah, and so therefore you can sleep under the entire area. However, when it comes to the airspace of less than 3 tefachim, so again, we will employ the principle of lavud. It will be a closed area, but you cannot sleep under the airspace. You just simply cannot sleep under that airspace. Now, again, by the way, that would be just in terms of your body control, that would be pretty impressive. Meaning that we're talking about the smallest area of a sukkah, 7x7 tefachim, and now you're limited to only sleeping underneath the schach portion, not the air portion. Okay, a tremendous difficult feat, but the difference between schach pasul versus air. In other words, in both cases, the sukkah is kosher. It just happens to be that with the schach pasul, you can sleep under the area, and with the air, you cannot sleep under the area. Okay. So the Gemara says, it really comes out to be so interesting. Now we have a phenomena where the schach pasul will contribute in terms of making a kosher schach, and not only that, but I could sleep underneath it, and meanwhile, obviously the schach pasul in of itself cannot create a kosher sukkah. Do we have that kind of idea precedent in halacha, where something can contribute and combine to making a kosher entity, even though it itself is not going to be able to be used to create that kosher entity? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yitzchak ben Eliashiv in. So the Gemara says, yeah, it does exist. It is possible, as we now turn to the top of your testament base, and that is Tit HaNirok Yochiach Shemitztarif La'arba'im Sa'a V'atova Balosa La'bot Tfilah. So basically mud, which happens to be able to be poured, so we can qualify it as a liquid. Now the mud in of itself is not going to be a kosher mikvah. I can't use mud in of itself to make a kosher mikvah. You can't tovel in mud. But meanwhile, if let's say I have almost 40 saw of water and I add the and I add a little bit of mud, so it will be mitzarif in order to get me to a kosher mikvah. So here we have it, an entity in which it in itself cannot be used for a mikvah, but at the same time, however, it can be mitzarif, it can combine in order to make a kosher mikvah. So in halacha, it does exist as such an entity. Now, obviously, that's the world of mikvah, that's the world of tumah tahara. We're talking about the world of sukkah. They're two different worlds. In fact, you remember the Gemara just a couple of days ago says, look, what exists in terms of tumah tahara does not necessarily exist over there in the world of sukkah. The Gemara is not using it as a proof. The Gemara is just simply saying that we do have this phenomena occur in halacha, that something cannot be used in order to create the entity, but it can be used in order to combine. Okay. We are now on Yotes Amud Beis, and we now continue with the Mishnah. Okay, we treat ourselves now in these last Mishnayos in the first parak of Sukkah to some extraordinarily odd-shaped sukkahs. Mishnah over here is going to be describing a number of odd-shaped sukkahs. It's going to be hard to really differentiate the wall from the roof, and the question now becomes, is this in fact going to be a kosher sukkah? So number one, Osek sukkasu kimitzrif, so you make your sukkah like a hut. Okay, you really don't need a picture of a hut, but over here we're talking about something that is cylindrical in shape. Basically, you're taking long branches, and they're creating the walls and the roof. In other words, the branches are shaped in a way where they are coming down. It kind of looks like a dome, where they're tied in the center, dropping down on each side, and so they are basically a blend of walls and roof. And the Mishnah says it's perfectly fine. Such a scenario would in fact create a kosher sukkah. Rashi over here commits swift kufshot sayadim shorvim boas ofos vaasu kikaver shemeshapes v'aleches shigago v'kiryosav echad. Both the roof and the walls are one entity, and halacha allows us to see it as both, meaning the walls and the roof. Now, Tosus over here points out that in order for this area to be a kosher area, so you have to have the minimum dimensions inside, meaning that a long 7x7 tefachim inside, it's going to be 10 tefachim high. So, so obviously now the trif has to be big enough so that you're able to box out, or really rectangular out, that area that's interior so that it's 7x7 and 10 tefachim high. Okay. Going back to the Mishnah now, another case in the Mishnah, shesam chalakoso, or let's say you lean it on the wall. So if you lean it on the wall, the Mishnah says, once again, that would be a kosher sukkah. Rabbi Lazar posel b'mnei she'en lagag v'chachamim machshirin. And on this case where I were to lean it against the wall. So Rabbi Elazar says that it's pasul. It has no roof. And the Chachamim say that it's kosher. It is, in fact, going to be a kosher sukkah. Okay, so basically now we have scenarios in which I created a structure where it's hard to discern between roof and wall, and we have a machlokus in the Mishnah, in the case of the Trif, in the case of the Schach, where I'm just leaning. It is a diagonal against the wall. So in both of those circumstances, so we have a machlokus between the Tanaim, whether or not that would work, that would satisfy the obligation of a sukkah. The Gemara's comment over here is as follows. Now already, you could tell that something's a little bit odd, because if you look at the note in the Mishnah in terms of who the halacha follows, like, so you see that the note follows like the Shita Rabbi Eliezer. That, of course, is really strange. When you have a machlokus between the Rabbim and the Yachid, we follow like the Rabbim, not like the Yachid. Additionally, Rabbi Eliezer is generally a position of a Tana that we don't follow. So, already, it's almost like we have some sort of alert that something's a little bit off over here. When we get to the end of the short sugya in the Gemara, we all will understand a lot better why, in fact, the halacha falls like Rabbi Eliezer. Stay tuned. Tana, we start with the Gemara. Mod Rabbi Eliezer, shimigbiam in a karka tefach, hoshi hifligam in a kosel tefach, shehi kishera. Okay, so, even though Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that if there is no way of discerning which part of it is the wall and which part of it is the roof, so then it's not going to be good. But Rabbi Eliezer will concede the following. Let's say that that it's not just simply a diagonal, but rather it's one tefach going straight up, and then I put the diagonal. So Rabbi Eliezer would say, under those circumstances, I'm comfortable. Alternatively, it is one tefach of schach coming straight off the roof. Straight off the wall, meaning in a horizontal, and then I have the diagonal, the remaining diagonal. So Rabbi Eliezer would say, under those circumstances, it would be fine. Meaning that if we're able to define even just a portion of wall clearly, or if we're able to define a portion of the schach clearly, and it doesn't have to be the entirety of the schach, it just simply need be just one tefach of the schach, where it is clearly defined as schach. Alternatively, if it is one tefach of wall, clearly defined as wall, so then Rabbi Eliezer says, under those circumstances, now I'm fine. Now I'm comfortable. Even though the remaining is diagonal, and that diagonal obviously is going to be a blend of schach and wall, but since we have an area that's clearly defined either as schach or as wall, and even though it's just one tefach, Rabbi Eliezer says, under those circumstances, I'm now comforted. My taimau de rabbanan, shipur olim ka olim damu. Now, as far as the sheet of the Chachamim are concerned, so the Gemara says, well, they view the diagonal as the OL, meaning the Chachamim have no problem looking at a diagonal and seeing it as both a wall and the roof as well. So Abaye finds Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef now is sleeping in Kilas Chasanim. This is now the second time in our perek that we're describing the Kilas Chasanim. It's basically a tent, a teepee, that is used almost like a canopy for your bed. But it is triangular in shape, and there are no flat lines. Not a flat line going up, not a flat line going across. It's not a vertical, it's not a horizontal, it's all diagonal. And now he's sleeping in Kilas Chasanim in a sukkah. So Amarle Kamanka Rabbi Eliezer. So he says, oh, so it must be that you follow the viewpoint of Rabbi Eliezer. Remember, the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer is that if it's all diagonal and there's no horizontal and there's no vertical, so Rabbi Eliezer says that that will not be viewed as a roof. In this particular case, that would be helpful because now that will not serve as a barrier between you and the sukkah on top of it. So the Gemara says, but Shavakta Rabbanan Vavada took Rabbi Eliezer, but I'm so confused. Meaning that sheet is Rabbi Eliezer. And meanwhile, in our Mishnah, the Chachamim would in fact view that as a roof. And that would serve now as a hefsek between you and the schach above it. So I don't understand. You're following the view of Rabbi Eliezer and not the view of the Chachamim. So Amarle, so he says to him, Braisa Ipchatani. So he says, look, you have your Mishnah's version. I have the Braisa version. And that is Rabbi Eliezer Machshav Chachamim Poslim. Rabbi Eliezer says it's kasher. The Chachamim say it's possible. Shavakta Masnisan. Okay, that's great. So you have your version. which is a Braisa version. You're leaving the Mishnaic version, and you're now going with the Braisa's version. So it says, yeah. Now, normally that, of course, would not be the conventional thinking. Conventional thinking is that we would be following a Mishnah, not a Braisa. But over here, this is one of those unique circumstances where we know that the Mishnah over here does not really represent the majority viewpoint. Our Mishnah represents only a minority viewpoint of what the correct version is of the machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim. Detanya we learned in a brisa, sasu kasu kamin srifo shesicha chalakosel. So if you make your sukkah either like a hut or just a simple diagonal against the wall, so Rabbi Nasan Omer, Rabbi Elazar posel min meshein lagag v'chachamim machshirin. So Rabbi Elazar says it's posel and the Chachamim say it's kasher. So what is that? That is our Mishnah's viewpoint. So I don't understand the Brisa over here, which is giving us our Mishnah's viewpoint. What is that showing us? Well, if you look carefully at the Brisa that we just learned, so it says Rabbi Nassan Omer, meaning that in the Brisa, it means that this is Rabbi Nassan's version of the Machlokas, which the Gemara now is assuming that the majority of the Tanaim do not agree with Rabbi Nassan and actually flip it around. That the Chachamim say that it's pasul, and it's Rabbi Elazar says that it's kasher. So now that assuming that that's correct, now we understand that what just happened over here is that based on the other information that's provided by the Braisa, so now we know that the correct version of our Mishnah is that Rabbi Elazar is the one who says that it is in fact acceptable, and the Chachamim say that it's unacceptable, meaning, and it's really the Chachamim who are of the opinion that diagonals cannot create a roof. A roof has to be a vertical. A roof has to be a horizontal. A roof cannot be a vertical, nor can a roof be a diagonal. Okay, now in terms of leniency, so we just learned in the beginning of our Gemara that you don't need the whole portion of the roof to be a horizontal. If you have just a tefach of it, that would be sufficient, but you need at least some of it to be a horizontal. Okay? That's the viewpoint not of Rabbi Eliezer, but rather that's the viewpoint of the Chachamim. Okay, now you understand. And now we understand how it could be that when Rav Yosef was sitting in his Kilas Chasanim, he was lying down in a sukkah, in a canopied bed, but the canopy was made up of a diagonal, so that didn't bother him at all. Because when it comes to diagonals, so we follow the Sheet of the Chachamim, and now we know the Sheet of the Chachamim is that a diagonal does not create a roof. Okay. Last part of today's daf, Machatzelas. We are in the Mishnah halfway down on your testament base. Machatzelas, Kanim Gedola, Asam Lashchiva, Mekabel Toma, V'ei Mesachin Ba. Lesichoch, V'ei Mesachin Chimba. Lesichoch. So, Mesachin Ba, V'ei Mekabel Toma. So, our Mishnah is talking about a reed. Now, the reeds are made out of well, let's call it bamboo, let's call it wood. All right, so let's just a quick introduction over here to the idea that it's going to be Mekabel Tuma. Okay, so what have we been saying time and again throughout our Masechta, and really throughout Shas, and that is that something made out of wood, that is Kli Eitz, and it does not have a Toch if it's Pshute Kli Eitz, so it's not going to be Mekabel Tuma. So we say that, and we say it very consistently. However, let's also make the point very clear, and that is that if it's something that somebody could sit on or lie down on, so now it is subject to Tumas Medras, and even wood is now going to be eligible and subject to Tumas Medras. And let's assume that once it becomes susceptible to Tumas Medras, it will become susceptible to other types of Tumas as well. So that means to say, just to be clear, now that if I have a wooden item, even though it doesn't have a toch, but if I made it that now it could be used for either sitting on or for lying down on, so now it's going to be eligible for Tumas Medras, and as such, it's now going to be Mekabel Tuma in other areas as well. Obviously, then I could not use it for my schach because it's Mekabel Tuma. So with that stated, so now you look back at our Mishnah, so now you understand. Let's reread the Mishnah. I have a Machatzelas Kanim Gedola, it's really large. Asal Shchiva, if I made it for lying down on, meaning its design, its construction was made to lie down on, so now it's Mekabel Tuma and I can't use it for schach. If, however, I made it for schach, if I made it for sikuch, so then misachim bav, v'ne mekabel es tuma. Now I could use it for schach, and because its primary purpose is for schach and not for lying down on, it's not going to be mekabel tuma. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Achas Katan Vachas Gedola, Asa Lashchiva Mekabal Tuma, Vein Mesachim Ba, Lesichach Mesachim Ba, Vein Mekabal Tuma. According to Rabbi Eliezer, size over here will not play any factor whatsoever. If it's large or if it's small. The only factor, according to Rabbi Eliezer, is that I make it for, did I make it for lying down on? Or did I make it for schach? Now, in terms of a better understanding of the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, the Gemara says, I need help. Hagufa kasha. Meaning, look at our Mishnah over here, it's difficult. So, according to the Tanakhama, intention of why I made it seems to be the most significant factor. So, if I made it for Shchiva, so now it's Mekabal Tum, I can't use it for Schach. So, Tamad Asal Shchiva, Has Tamal Sichuch. So, that means to tell me now that if I if I did not have intention and I just was and I just made it with no kavana, so now you could use it for schach. It's not going to be mekabel tuma. And then v'hadu tani l'sichuch misachim b'aveinu mekabel as tuma. And then it says that if I made it specifically for schach, so now it's not going to be mekabel tuma, which means that time and dasa l'sichuch as tam l'shchiva. Okay, so obviously now what becomes a problem is that in our Mishnah we have conflicting inferences of the Mishnah. The Mishnah would seem to indicate that if I made it stam, so from the first part of the Mishnah it sounds like it's now the generically for schach. In the second part of the Mishnah it sounds like it's generically for lying down on. Which inference is correct? Halokasha kambegidola habekatana. So the Gemara says, it really depends on the size. If it's large, so we assume that it's for schach. If it's small, then we assume that it is for lying down. Okay. In other words, the general assumption now, as the Gemara understands our Mishnah, is that the size of the item is really going to be is really going to play a role in terms of what its generic purpose is going to be, what its unspecified purpose is going to be. Now let's compare that with the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Lazar Omer Achas Katan Vachas Gedona Asa L'Shchiva Mekabel Tuma Ve'Masachim Ba. So Tama Dasa L'Shchiva Astam L'Sichoch. So now within Shitas Rabbi Eliezer, we're going to basically be bothered by the same question, which is that Rabbi Eliezer says, look, size is not going to influence the halacha. So if that's true, so then Ema Seifa. So I go now to the end of the Mishnah, which is Asa L'Sichoch Masachim Ba Ve'Ne Mekabel Tuma Tama Dasa L'Sichoch Astam L'Shchiva. So Ela Amarava. So the Gemara says as follows. So now we're confused by the conflicting inferences within the Shita Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer discounts the issue of size. So now it comes out that according to Rabbi Eliezer, I have conflicting inferences, and size can no longer become the influencer in terms of what I'm making it for. So the Gemara says as follows: Ela Amarava Bigdola Kulam Lo Pligi Destam LaSichach. So if I'm making a really large mat, much larger than the size of a person, so clearly then it's made for the purposes of sikuch, of schach, and therefore it's not going to be mekabel tuma, and therefore you could use it. Now, ki pligi, so fine. So that is if I made a gedola. Now, when is there going to be a debate between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Eliezer? Because we know there's a debate. So b'katana, we're talking about now where it's small, small meaning that it basically can fit a regular person. So Tanakhama, sefer stam katana l'shchiva. So according to the Tanakhama, so if I made it and I did not have any kavana, but because it's the size of a person, it's basically, we know that it was designed for shchiva. And we're going to assume, therefore, that it's going to be mekabel tuma, and I can't use it for schach. And Rabbi Eliezer suffers stam katana nam l'sichuch. And Rabbi Eliezer will say, no, that even if it's katana, stama, if I made it unspecified, it's for schach. V'hachi kamar. And now, here's how you're going to be explaining the Tanakhama. And that is Machatzel Sakanim Gedola. So if it's large, Asa L'Shchiva, Mekabel Tuma V'Mesachim Ba. So if I made it for Shchiva, so in other words, and I specified that it was going to be for lying down, so it's going to be Mekabel Tuma, and it can't be Mesache. So Taima Da Asa L'Shchiva, that's because I made it for Shchiva. Astama, Nasa Kamisha, Asa L'Sichuch Mesachim Ba. Which means that, but under normal circumstances, if it's large, so the size of it's going to dictate that it's best, that unspecified, I made it for schach. Now let's skip the parentheses and the azar Rabbi Lazar lemeimar aches katana v'aches gedola stama Sheira L'sichach, that whether it's large or whether it's small, it doesn't really matter. That under either circumstance, it's going to be stama. If it went unspecified, so it was not designed for lying down on, and therefore it would be kosher for schach. Comes out that now that Rabbi Lezer is a kula over that of the opinion of the Tanakama. Okay, we'll pause over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. I know we're kind of mid sentence, but we'll pause over here. Tomorrow we'll quickly. We'll quickly review in order to continue with tomorrow's daf. In the meantime, however, today, let's review today's daf. Okay, a discussion today about one-directional fictional walls. Okay, so our first topic of discussion was Pitik or Yod Visosim. The idea that the edge of the roof, as long as it's one tefach thick, is able to descend in order to create a wall. So, whether or not it works, and whether or not it works one-directionally or two-directionally. So whether or not it works, so it could be that both Rava and Abai are of the opinion that it works. Whether it works in both directions, both for its external and for its internal, or it only works for the internal but not for the external, that's the machlokes between Abai and Rava. Abai says that it works in both directions, and therefore, if I have a sukkah that's bounded by this fictional walls, the Pitik or Yod Visosim, even though it was not intended for that direction, it was intended for the other direction, so Abai would say that it works, and Rava says no. It only works one directionally for its interior, not for its exterior. Okay, we had another version of the machlokes between Abai and Rava, the Pumbedisa version, where they were not arguing about Pitikra, but rather they were arguing about Lavud. But the Gemara notes that version is not accepted. For Lavud works two directionally, both for the interior and for the exterior, and the machlokes between Abai and Rava is only by Pitikra Yor Visosim. We then discovered a sukkah that had two walls, but the third wall was kind of hard to discover, right? This is the Rav Kahana sukkah that he was sitting in. And Rav Ashi asked him, where's that sukkah? And his response is, where's the third wall for the sukkah? And he said, I'm employing the rules of nira mibifnim v'shava mibachutz, okay, which is a mechanism which allows me to have a lechi by a mavui. And the Gemara is saying that he's borrowing that idea, he's using it over here. Okay, difficult how you can use the lechi concept and move it over to a sukkah. Tosos went over that point. We went over the Tosos. Anyway, that created the third wall. Then on Yud Tes Amud Aleph, we went through the idea of psal hayotzim in a sukkah, extending the sukkah. So psal hayotzim in a sukkah nidun kusukkah, that's the rule. What does that mean? The Gemara gave no less than four different interpretations. The first two interpretations were basically sukkah extenders, either an extension behind the sukkah, or an extension of only one wall heading down, but the other wall not keeping up with it. But as long as the schach keeps up with it, so then the sukkah is going to be extending even in that direction as well. Those are the two interpretations. The Gemara also gave two other interpretations having to do where it's not that the sukkah is being extended, it's just that I have one part of the schach is kasher, the majority of it being kasher, the minority of it not being kasher, either because it's the area is not shaded, or the area is not shaded properly. But nevertheless, as long as the majority of the area is shaded properly, so you have a kasher sukkah in its entirety. Or alternatively, the other pshat that we offered is that it's a sukkah 7x7. More than four of it, four plus, is bounded by kasher schach. A little bit less than three is bounded by pasul schach. The whole thing is kasher. You can sleep under the whole thing. And the Gemara contrasted that to airspace, where even though we're going to say loved, but I can't sleep under the airspace. And the Gemara wanted to know where do we find such a precedent where I can have something contributing to making it a kosher entity, even though it in itself cannot be used. And the Gemara says mud by a mikvah. So mud can contribute to make a kosher mikvah, but mud in of itself cannot be used by a kosher mikvah. That was all the Amud Aleph on the Amud Beis. So we went over the following ideas. Number one, what if I have schach, which is both a wall and the roof? In other words, it's a diagonal. Can I view a diagonal as both wall and roof? The answer is no. It can't be both. It can't be wall and it can't be roof, right? It could serve as one. It may be serving as the other, but it cannot be both. Okay. Machlok is between Rav Elazar and the Chachamim. What we ended up doing is flipping around the shitas because our Mishnah is giving us a minority viewpoint of the way it was presented, but the truth of the matter is that really the Chachamim are the ones who say that a diagonal cannot be both a wall and a roof. Okay, that's the Gemara's conclusion over there. And finally, when I'm making a mat, so and I'm making it for schach, perfect. If I'm making it to lie down on, subject to tumas medrash, and therefore I cannot use it for schach. If it is specified why I'm making it, perfect. If it's not specified, so we have a machlokas in the Mishnah between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer. And right now, the way the Gemara presents it is that according to the Chachamim, if it's large, we always assume that it's going to be for schach. And it's not for lying down on. If it's small and it's specified for lying down on, now it's mekabel tumah and I can't use it. That's the sheet of the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer disagrees. We start tomorrow with going over that machlokas again.